You're listening to I'm Ready for My Close-Up 2 on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is the sequel to Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of film and visual culture. In this week's show, I'm talking to actor Bill Moseley about his career in the horror film genre, and the continuing occurrence of sequels and remakes in his work, from appearing in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and the third Evil Dead film Army of Darkness in the 1980s, the remake of Night of the Living Dead in 1990, which has just spawned an animated prequel, House of a Thousand Corpses and its sequel The Devil's Rejects in the middle of the last decade, and the sequel to the remake of Herschel Gordon Lewis's 2000 Maniacs, now called 2001 Maniacs, which is out on DVD and Blu-ray now.
I just watched 2001 Maniacs Field of Screams, and it seems to me, and this may just be a subjective thing, that looking at your career, the films that really stand out are films like Texas Chainsaw 2, Army of Darkness, the Rob Zombie films you've worked on, and now Field of Screams, when they're not only horror films, but they're horror films with a large amount of black comedy in them as well. And I was wondering if that was a sort of role that really attracted you.
Absolutely. I am a funny guy by nature. And even though sometimes that humor is a dark humor, I really enjoy, yes, I enjoy those parts and those characters.
And it seems to me as well that a film like Field of Screams and also the recent Rob Zombie films that you're in have a very cathartic nature to the sort of horror they present on screen, because it's so extreme, and then the humor that's related to it actually means the audience can kind of recover in a way, either by sort of jumping out of their seats or by laughing. And I wonder if that's a more subversive type of horror film in a way than traditional ones.
Well, I think what happens is, in order to hang on to the audience, you do have to let them up for breath every so often. And so when there is that an opportunity to breathe, to laugh a little bit, then you can just, you know, it's almost like, I guess, trying to drown them in a barrel of water. You have to kind of let them up a little bit to gasp and then put their heads right back under.
You said that you're a funny man at heart. In that sense, then, when it comes to playing a role such as W, as he's now presented in Field of Screams, which obviously is kind of an allusion to W. Bush, I presume. Is it also your idea of being a satirist as well as an actor? Because these are quite broad characters and quite broad situations, but also ones that have reflections of extremes of everyday life.
You know, I just play them basically as straight as I can. Meaning that I don't really approach the character with that in mind. I just try to make the characters real. And what I've been lucky is that working with screenplays like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which was Kit Carson and Toby Hooper, and then, of course, Rob's great scripts for House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, and a great script, the great script of Terrence Zadunich in Darren Bousman in Repo, the genetic opera, and of course with Tim and 2001 Maniacs. You know, those characters exist in a very quirky world, or quirky worlds, and as long as you make them real, you know, it's really, I think it's up to the actor to find the humor, you know, if there's humor to be found in any situation. But it's also up to the writer to, you know, provide us with the situations and the props and the characters and the experiences so that we can make laughs out of them or, you know, scare the crap out of people if need be.
Sure. And also, I mean, I don't know if there's a similar debate in America, but in Britain over the last few years, there seems to be a lot of interest in the notion of political correctness and what you can and you can't say in certain situations. And certainly in a film like Field of Screams, like the Rob Zombie movies, the dialogue and the situation is so over the top, it allows you to be politically incorrect, but in the same way, you're mocking the stereotypes that you're presenting.
Yes, and that I think, gave our director, Tim Sullivan, a particular delight, because Tim, you know, he, I'm sure, owes a lot to Herschel Gordon Lewis to begin with, but that just to provide 2,000 maniacs. But then Tim has definitely stuffed it with a lot of fun poking at gays, straights, blacks, Hispanics, Asians. Yep, you know, so just about, I don't know, just about everybody. And he really seems to love it. I mean, when we were making the movie, every time any one of those situations arose, he was laughing so hard he was almost crying. So for him, I guess that is that's a dream come true. My sense of humor is, you know, I can certainly go to those places, but my humor tends toward a little more, I don't know if intellectual is the right word for it, or, you know, pratfall. I mean, there's different, I guess we all have a different sense of humor. And Tim's, I think, he was always smiling on the set of 2001 Maniacs, because I think that was really, you know, right in his wheelhouse, so to speak.
I've read in other interviews with you about how you were very happy to be following in the footsteps of Robert Englund in playing the same character that he did in the previous 2001 Maniacs. And since you started your professional career in the 1980s, it was around the same time that he was becoming a horror icon. And I was wondering if he was someone that you sort of looked up to throughout your career.
You know, I know Robert. I've met him several times at different horror conventions and award ceremonies and things. And he's a great guy, a funny guy, very well-spoken, well-read, well-traveled man. And it's funny because actually one of the first jobs I got when I had moved my little family to Los Angeles back in the mid to late 80s was working on something called Freddy's Nightmares, which was a short-lived TV series based with Robert Englund as kind of the master of ceremonies. and it was funny because so that really was my first gig. It was I did a show. I think the episode was called Black Tickets, and I didn't realize it at the time, certainly. But years later, someone saw the episode and was surprised that it actually starred a young Brad Pitt. But I did not meet Robert on that set. He was I guess he just, you know, would just make funny comments, like he would, like sardonic comments, you know, long after we had all gone home. But I love Robert Englund. I actually, when Tim told me that, or when Tim asked me if I wanted to, you know, play Mayor Buckman, because Robert wasn't going to do it, you know, I was a little concerned because I don't really want to try to follow in Robert's footsteps, because they're those shoes are too big for me. So what I did ask Tim was, I said, can I make Mayor Buckman my own, or do you want me to basically parrot what Robert had done? And he said, no, you can reinterpret him however you want. So what I ended up doing was being very happy to hear that, and the first thing I did was I went to YouTube and typed in the words Foghorn Leghorn.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, that old blustery rooster from cartoons. And so that's kind of really where my journey of discovery of Mayor George W. Buckman began.
Well, I suppose that must be quite an interesting thing to do as an actor, to play a role that has been previously inhabited by someone else and leave your own mark on it, because you were also in the remake of Night of the Living Dead in 1990, which in itself must have been a project that came with a lot of baggage even before it was released in the cinemas, because people had such high expectations of it. And then, of course, you were playing a character who had been played in a different way by a different actor years earlier,
who then was one of the producers and on the set every day.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Russ Streiner, the original Johnny. So that was, yes, that was interesting. Well, you know, what was funny about that was that I had just worked with Tom Savini on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. And Tom had then been given the reins to the remake of Night of the Living Dead by George Romero, with whom Tom had worked for many years. And Tom sent me the script and said, read the script and pick any character. And so I read the script, and I actually picked you know, one of the characters in the basement, I think the character that ultimately Tommy Tolles played, because that looked like it, you know, had at least 3 weeks to a month worth of work. Because I was thinking, not in terms of the aesthetics of it, but in terms of, you know, the finances of it. And I told Tom, I want to play the guy in the basement. And Tom said, pick any character, just make sure it's Johnny. I was kind of like, oh, no. Because Johnny actually ended up working, I think, maybe 3 or 4 days, which was fine. And what I did was I immediately went out and rented, back then I think it was all VHS tapes, Die Monster Die, because I wanted to get the Boris Karloff accent down. For some reason, that's the movie that I really studied. And so I got Boris's accent. And so when I showed up, at least I had that down. But in terms of, you know, Russ Streiner's character, I think there was, fortunately, there was a little more in the remake than there was with Russ. And also I had fun certainly working with Patricia Tallman, who played Barbara, and with whom I then worked, well, I didn't work with her in Army of Darkness, but we were both characters in it. And then we just recently did a movie together called Dead Air. And Patricia Tallman now goes from my sister Barbara to my ex-wife. But that was a lot of fun. You know, one of the problems with trying to play someone else is that you tend to see them at conventions. And it's kind of weird to me, you know, to go to a convention and there's the six Jasons or the five, you know, the three Michael Myers or the five this or that. And that ends up being that's a problem I don't really look forward to having. But I do see Russ at the conventions every once in a while. But fortunately, you know, I have other characters, and so Russ is, you know, seems to be, you know, Night of the Living Dead is his bailiwick, and he certainly did a great job.
Sure. Although you have reprised the character of Johnny again for a new animated film that's coming out next year, Night of the Living Dead Origins.
Yes. And that, I can't wait to see that, because that apparently is going to be done in the style of 300 or Beowulf, kind of animated, but also computer generated, so that, yeah, that should be fantastic. Zebediah DeSoto. I can't wait to see that.
Was the original Night of the Living Dead a film that had impressed you when you were becoming an actor?
Absolutely. You know, it was before I really even thought that there was any, you know, a ghost of a chance to, before there was a ghost of a chance to make acting a career. That never even occurred to me. But I saw Night of the Living Dead, I guess, was it maybe 1968? Let's see, maybe I saw it in 1970 in Manhattan, and I saw it at a midnight screening at the Coronet or Baronet Theater. And, you know, and I'd had a, it was a perfect night for me to sit there and just absorb this movie. And I, you know, to me, it was one of, you know, the most powerful movies I'd ever seen at the time in terms of, you know, shaping my horror destiny. You know, between that and Carnival of Souls, which, you know, the old version, and, of course, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Exorcist. I mean, there's a handful of them, but Night of the Living Dead was right up there.
And I suppose also, a bit like some of the films that you've made, Night of the Living Dead was very much a film that responded to its times, with the unrest in the student population in America in terms of their dissatisfaction with Vietnam, with the birth of the civil rights movement. If you then compare that, for example, with when you did Chainsaw Massacre 2, that was at the height of Reaganism, and it partially, it does seem to be a bit of a satire on the capitalism of the time.
Absolutely.
And then even something like Field of Screams, there are pot shots being taken about the way people mythologize themselves in reality TV shows, even though they're just as fake as some of the scripted shows.
Absolutely. And also the fact that, again, everything has become so politically correct now. Everybody is erring on the side of caution. And that is, it ends up making the world very dangerous and also very bland at the same time. You really, you know, that anybody that says, you know, makes the slightest misstep is condemned, I guess, you know, because especially if it's, you know, a Mel Gibson conversation that's been taped surreptitiously, or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, you're basically condemned to have that haunt you for the rest of your life. So I think that, you know, Tim has had a lot of fun, maniacal as it might be, in just busting all that wide open.
And this new Night of the Living Dead prequel that you've made, is that addressing any social concerns like the way that the first three of Romero's original trilogy did?
That you would have to ask Zebediah.
Okay, but in terms of the script?
I sure hope so. You know, I actually, let's see here. The one thing I can tell you is it's set in New York City. So it's no longer rural. So there's certainly that change. And then, of course, you know, if in fact that that situation where the dead come back to life for no apparent reason were to strike a major metropolitan area, you know, all kinds of different things, I'm sure, could happen. You know, it was very interesting, of course, at the end of the original Night of the Living Dead to have a black character survive, and then, of course, you know, kind of a redneck posse seeing a black face in the window and shooting first and asking questions later. Whether that happens in Night of the Living Dead Origins, I guess we'll have to wait to see. That's what I love about horror films, is that they're, with horror films, you can really, you know, you can put a lot of politics into them. And, you know, just like Tim has done, you know, like Toby and Kit did with Chainsaw 2. You know, it was funny you mentioned about the consumerism that was being ridiculed in it. You know, first of all, of course, the Chainsaw family has now become, they've become capitalists with their... you know, with our rolling grill a go-go and our croissant sandwiches. And it was interesting because of the very first copy of the script I got many, many years ago, as the credits, the opening credits rolled, what Toby and Kit had envisioned was a wall of different, almost like a like in a, like some kind of a big store like Macy's or Harrods, I guess, where there would be all kinds of yuppie sweaters and tennis rackets and different things, and they would all be cut by chainsaws. And that somehow never made it in, which is sad, but that was, you know, just speaking of your theme, that was, you know, that was going to drive it home even more. That all these emblems were going to be sawed up. I love that. I mean, I love... You know, certainly scaring people is fun. It's fun for the people that get scared for the most part. But also, you know, just sliding a few little references in here and there, little social references, political references. You know, I think it's a hoot.
Yeah. Well, and I think one thing that must have been quite interesting for you as an actor was when you got to reprise the role of Otis in three very different films for Rob Zombie, because in the live-action films, House of a Thousand Corpses seems to be very much a sort of roller coaster ride, where it's as much of the sensations that the movie's creating as any sort of traditional coherent storyline, while then The Devil's Rejects is very much more in the style of a 1970s road movie. And then I haven't actually seen the haunted world of El Superbisto, but I assume it's a different kind of genre again.
Well, it's a animated, it's a cartoon, basically. It looks like something Hanna-Barbera on acid. And actually, and Otis and Captain Spaulding are really just little cameos at the very end.
Okay.
So we just show up. You know, I think both Sid and I both had, you know, each had maybe two or three lines. So it really is just kind of a, you know, it's an afterthought, but certainly a fun afternoon and a nice lunch. But with Otis, you know, it was interesting because with Otis, House of a Thousand Corpses, I ended up finally getting Otis about maybe a month after we had wrapped.
Okay.
Because after a month after we had wrapped, or even longer, Rob wanted to shoot a couple of extra scenes because he, I think, you know, I think the film needed a little bit more fat on its bones. And so we went over to his makeup man's, Wayne Toth's makeup shop, And that's where we shot the Run Rabbit Run scene, which is black and white and me standing there in like a little lumberjack cap and doing the Run Rabbit Run. And that was really where I finally got Otis. It was funny because, you know, throughout the production, I mean, I kind of had a pretty good idea of Otis, but, I was always adjusting. I never really hit Otis as, you know, something that soaked all the way into my DNA. I was still working on Otis. And then I did that. I did the Run Rabbit Run scene, and it was like, And the good news about Devil's Rejects is that that was the only time so far that I've actually been able to reprise a character that I had already come up with. And so when I did Devil's Rejects, I hit the ground running as Otis. And it was really satisfying to already have your character. So then it was just about adjusting to the story and the scenes, the different actors, the experiences, the lines, etc., which is plenty of work in and of itself. But when you have the character, it all, you know, falls in pretty naturally. And that was really exciting to, you know, as I say, you know, in House of a Thousand Corpses, it felt like kicking the tires on a new car, and Devil's Rejects, it felt like, you know, taking it out for a spin.
Well, and also comparing the two films, well, I think House of a Thousand Corpses is a fun film. Devil's Rejects is actually quite disturbing at times in a very different way. Rather than it being just about sort of a carnival ride, it's actually more about the trauma that characters go through, whether they're on the right side of the law or the wrong. I was wondering what it was like taking the same character from one very different situation to another.
You know, I appreciated it. It was a lot more satisfying. It was certainly a lot more difficult. You're right, absolutely. If I were to sit down and decide, you know, which I would rather watch, House of a Thousand Corpses or Devil's Rejects, 9 times out of 10, it's House of a Thousand Corpses. And only because it's easier to watch and more fun. But in terms of Devil's Rejects, it was a lot harder in terms of, again, having that character down, but also being asked to do the things I was asked to do with Otis, made it very difficult, even stressful. You know, there's the motel room scene with Priscilla Barnes, which was immensely satisfying, but also really, really uncomfortable while we were doing it, just because we both went to that very uncomfortable place, you know. And it was so funny because on the set of Devil's Rejects, Rob chided me on several occasions because what would happen is I would, as soon as he said cut, I would pop out of character. And I would maybe crack a joke or do something just to kind of lighten up, because being Otis for an extended period of time was a little heavy. And so I would crack a joke or do something. And Rob chided me a couple of times because other actors, you know, like to stay in character even when he called cut or whatever. So, you know, that was their style. And I guess I was, you know, my cracking a joke or, you know, doing a little impromptu dance, whatever I was doing, I think would distract them from their actorly work. So, it was a burden. It was a burden, but as I say, it was immensely satisfying. I think certainly playing Otis and House of a Thousand Corpses was more fun, I guess, if you want to call it that, just because, you know, there was a kind of a lighter mood to it. But I love Devil's Rejects because it was so heavy. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's arguably my favorite movie I've ever done. So it certainly is, you know, it's number one or number two, I guess, depending on the constellations and, you know, my mood for the day.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, I think probably the most comedic film that you've done is Army of Darkness, which at times is just like watching a Marx Brothers film. And I was wondering what the combination of wearing a full body costume where you're unrecognizable as an actor and still having to act within that role, and also being in a horror film where it's much more about the comedy perhaps than the horror.
You know, it was an interesting job because I ended up... I remember getting the job. I remember we shot the movie. Most of my scenes, in fact, all of them were night shoots. Of course, you know, darkness, you know, so pretty much if you're one of the skeleton warriors are going to be in the dark. Mm-hmm. And it was a very long costuming and makeup process. I think that was probably the longest makeup I've ever had. So that was probably on and off was maybe 6 hours.
Wow.
Probably more like, 4.5 on and 1.5 off. It was a fun because I did have a scene with Bruce, and that was a lot of fun. But of course, then you're asked to improv at maybe 2 or 3 in the morning when you're already, the coffee has ceased to excite your molecules and you're already going brain dead. So there was certainly that to contend with. Also, one of my big scenes was when I was named new captain of the Army of the Dead by Evil Ash, I then lead the, quote, successful charge on the castle. And that was done around, again, 2 or 3 in the morning. I had on that full body armor. I had on the makeup. I had a patch over one eye, and I had a full white sclera lens over the other. And I had a sword drawn. Plus, not only was I galloping my horse through a field of extras with pikes and swords and torches, but also I was pulling with my offhand. I was actually leading a second horse on which sat a skeleton warrior, like a general, like a dummy. Mm. So, and I was kind of, and I had, so I couldn't, hold the rein up or people would see that I was leading it. It was supposed to be, riding under its own steam. So, and we did 3 charges. So we had to do 3 different takes of that scene, galloping full bore, leading another horse with all of that stuff over my eyes. And, that was, so it was also dangerous, I guess is the best way to describe it. But there was, I got to say that working with Sam Raimi was hilarious. I mean, he was a really funny guy. He would do, after we would wrap, we'd get back to the hotel around 6 or 7 in the morning. And he was really a brilliantly funny man. And he thought I was funny, but I know that he is like one of the funniest guys I've ever met. And he was, he had a lot of physical humor and certainly, intellectual humor. He's a hilarious guy. So, and he would keep us all laughing. So even after a long night of bumps and bruises and freezing our little skeleton tails off, Sam was just a hoot. So he made you want to, first of all, it made you laugh instead of cry. And then he made you want to, go back and do it all over again.
2001 Maniacs Part 2, Field of Screams, is available on DVD and Blu-ray now, and Night of the Living Dead Origins 3D will be out sometime next year. For more info about all of Bill Moseley's films, please visit my blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com, where you can find a podcast of this show. And I'm ready for my close-up. We'll be back in its usual 5 o'clock slot next Friday. Thanks for listening.